Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive. This time we are going
into Genesis 2.
Genesis 2, that's right. Now you might think,
you know this one.
Yeah, you know the creation story forward and backward. But we're going to be looking at this through
a very specific lens.
Yeah, through the lens of an academic lecture by Professor Robert Van Noy. And trust me,
it brings up some really
interesting stuff.
Yeah.
That
turns things on their head.
Really kind of makes you rethink.
Yeah.
The traditional interpretations of this very famous chapter.
Absolutely. And, you know, we often see Genesis 2 as like a retelling of Genesis 1, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like, oh, we already heard this, but Professor Van Noy, he argues that it actually has a different purpose.
Okay.
It's setting us up for the fall.
Okay. So it's like a setup.
Yeah. Like Genesis 2 is the setup for Genesis 3.
Gotcha. So how does he, you know, support that idea?
So he points out the way that Genesis 2 focuses on humanity's role within creation, right? So like the Garden of Eden, the forbidden fruit, Eve's creation, it's all laying the groundwork for what happens next.
I see.
Like almost like the stage is being set for this dramatic play.
Right. Like we're getting a behind the scenes look at the why behind the what.
Exactly. And one of the things that he brings up is this really fascinating word. It's a Hebrew word, Teledot, which is often translated as generations.
Okay. I've heard that before, but I never really understood.
Yeah.
What it meant.
Yeah. So Professor Van Noy suggests that Teledot, it's more than just like a genealogy.
Right.
Think of it like a trail of breadcrumbs leading you through the twists and turns of Genesis.
Okay.
Right. So it appears at key turning points, showing the ripple effect of certain events or individuals.
So it's not just listing descendants. It's highlighting
cause and effect.
Cause and effect.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, for example, like Teledot introduces the stories of Abraham coming from Terah, Joseph emerging from Jacob's lineage.
Right.
So it's about understanding the consequences or outcomes stemming from these figures.
Okay, so like the ripples that mm-hmm. come from those key figures.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow, I never realized that.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
It gives it a whole new...
Totally changes how it...
All new structure.
Think about those stories.
Yeah, and it's all about structure.
Wow. Okay, yeah. Well, speaking of connections and structure, what about like those supposed contradictions between Genesis 1 and 2,
right?
You know, the order of creation thing, you know?
That age-old question.
Yeah, the plants and the humans, which came first, you know?
Yeah, Professor Van Noy dives right into that.
Okay.
He's not shying away.
Good, let's hear it.
He says, these apparent discrepancies stem from overlooking some important details.
Like what?
So first he points out that Genesis 2 doesn't describe the initial creation of all vegetation.
Right.
It's God specifically planting the Garden of Eden. So it's not about...
It's a specific garden?
It's a specific garden. So that changes the context a little bit.
Okay, I see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. But what about the order of, like, the humans and the animals?
That's where it gets even more interesting.
All right.
So the Hebrew verb tenses used in verses 2.8 and 2.19...
Okay.
...are actually quite ambiguous.
Oh, really?
Depending on how it's translated, they could support the idea that God actually planted the garden and formed the animals before creating Adam.
So there's like wiggle room?
There's wiggle room.
There's
translation. That's so interesting.
And influence how we understand it.
Wow.
And Professor Van Noy emphasizes that the same Hebrew word can have multiple meanings.
Yeah.
Context is key.
Right.
And he even quotes another scholar who said, it's unlikely that the compiler of Genesis was a dunce.
Right.
For supposedly including these blatant contradictions.
That's a good point. It's
yeah.
like you got to think about the time.
The time.
The language, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
All that.
Different worldview. Yeah. So, okay. So the order of creation is maybe.
Murky.
Not as clear cut.
Little murky.
As we thought. But the location of the garden itself.
Oh, yeah.
That's a mystery.
That's a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, those tantalizing descriptions of those rivers.
Yeah.
The Pishon, Gihon, Tigris, and Euphrates.
It really gets people's imaginations going.
People have been wondering about this for...
For centuries.
For centuries.
Yeah.
Where is this place?
Where could it be?
Yeah.
So Professor Van Noy presents three main theories.
Okay, this is where it gets good.
Hit me. All right, so one theory is that the geography of the pre-flood world was drastically different.
Go away.
Maybe the garden lies submerged beneath the Persian Gulf.
Wow. Like a lost...
A lost paradise.
Atlantis situation.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. Okay, what's another theory?
Another possibility is that those river names were reused after the flood.
Oh, okay.
So they were given to new rivers in this new world.
So it could be like a total...
It's a needle in a haystack.
Red herring. Wow. Okay, so it could be anywhere.
It could be anywhere.
That's exciting.
from your backyard to the top of Mount Everest.
That's so cool. Okay, what's the third one?
And then there's the theory that throws a real wrench in the works.
Oh, no.
What if the Garden of Eden is purely symbolic?
Okay, the Garden of the Mind, kind of?
The Garden of the Mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Professor Vannoy quotes J.C. Gibson, who describes the garden as the kind of place they know this world ought to be.
Oh, that's nice.
Right.
I like that.
And he says Adam is not one specific man, but rather every man.
Oh, so it's about like...
humanity.
Humanity as a whole.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not necessarily a physical...
It's not about a physical space.
It's more about...
a state of being.
Interesting. Okay, so is there something...
I mean, it's a different way of looking at it.
Yeah, is there something... less compelling about that? You know, like the idea of a real tangible paradise lost...
It's definitely...
Doesn't that have more power than just a...
It's definitely more romantic to think of it as this physical place that we long for.
Yeah. But what about the trees in the garden?
Yeah.
You know, the tree of life and the...
tree of knowledge.
Tree of knowledge of good and evil.
That's a big one.
Yeah. What about those?
Yeah. So those are really crucial. And Professor Vannoy, he suggests that they represent more than just literal fruit.
Okay. So we're not talking about Adam and Eve... literally grabbing an apple.
Not grabbing an apple off a branch.
Off a branch.
Yeah.
No. Okay, so what do they symbolize?
So think of them as embodying choices, possibilities, the very nature of knowledge itself.
Okay.
Particularly the tree of knowledge. It's about a type of understanding that came with consequences.
Okay, so not necessarily good versus evil knowledge.
Not good versus evil.
But knowledge that came at a price.
At a price.
Okay, I like that that's more relatable.
Right, because we've all had those moments where knowing something changed things.
Sometimes for the worse.
And not always for the better.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
And Professor Vannoy emphasizes that this knowledge wasn't inherently evil, but it did lead to a loss of innocence, a separation from God.
Okay.
So it's like a coming of age story in a way.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that's really interesting.
All right. Gaining knowledge comes with responsibility.
Right. And they weren't quite ready for that.
They weren't ready.
Yeah.
And that brings us to another symbolic figure, the serpent.
Yeah. So traditionally we see that as like the embodiment of temptation.
Of evil.
Of evil. Yeah. You know, that's a sneaky snake.
But Professor Vannoy offers a slightly different interpretation.
Oh, okay. I'm intrigued. What does he say?
What if it represents intellectual curiosity?
Oh.
That innate human desire to question, to explore, to push boundaries.
Wow. I never thought about it that way.
Right. It kind of reframes the whole serpent tempting Eve scenario.
Yeah.
It's not about shunning knowledge.
Right.
But understanding its power.
Right.
The responsibility that comes with it.
Oh, I like that. Okay, so we're starting to see Genesis 2.
In a new light.
In a whole new light. It's like...
peeling back the layers.
They're peeling back these layers of...
of interpretation.
Interpretation, yeah.
Finding these deeper meanings that still resonate today.
Yes, and there's still more to uncover.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to talk about the creation of Eve and...
that's a big one.
How that emphasizes this... partnership,
partnership
between men and women.
Absolutely.
And Professor Vannoy has some interesting thoughts about that.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll be right back after a quick break. Okay, so we're back and we were talking about the creation of Eve.
Yeah, a really important part of the Genesis 2 story.
Yeah, and so often it's interpreted in a way that makes her seem
subservient.
Yeah, or like responsible.
It's a fall.
Yeah, for the fall.
Like it's all her fault.
Right, exactly. And I'm glad that Professor Vannoy
addresses that.
Yeah, he addresses that head on. So
yeah, he points out that the Hebrew word for helper that's used to describe Eve doesn't actually imply inferiority at all.
Okay, so what does it imply then?
Think of it more like a strong, supportive partnership.
Okay.
It's about Eve being a co-creator with Adam, essential to the fulfillment of God's plan.
Okay, so like a true partnership.
Yeah,
not,
we're in it together.
Yeah, not one being above the other.
Not a hierarchy.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, I like that that's much more empowering.
Right.
It aligns with the idea that they were both given dominion over creation.
Yeah, dominion over creation.
You know, they share in the responsibility.
You have a possibility for the garden for each other.
Exactly, yeah. And Professor Vannoy highlights that this shared responsibility is key to understanding what happens in Genesis 3.
The fall.
You know, the fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't just Eve's choice.
It was a choice made together.
Right.
And they both have to face the consequences.
Wow, that's... Yeah, it really makes you rethink those traditional interpretations.
And it really emphasizes that partnership.
Yeah, that partnership.
That's so central.
Yeah. And so with all these layers of symbolism and interpretation, what does all this mean for us, the listeners? You know, why should we care about Professor Van Hoy's take on Genesis 2?
That's the big question, isn't it? Like, how does this ancient text connect to our lives?
Right.
Professor Van Hoy encourages us to consider some pretty big questions.
Okay.
Like, what does it mean to be human?
Okay.
What's our relationship with knowledge and power?
Ooh, that's a good one.
How do we navigate temptation and choice?
Yeah.
And maybe most importantly, how do we deal with the consequences of our actions?
Wow.
Those are big questions.
Those are big questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I see how Genesis 2...
It provides a framework.
Yeah, it provides a framework for exploring those questions. Yeah. It's not just a myth. You know,
it's a reflection of the human experience.
Exactly.
We still grapple with these questions today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And one point that really resonated with me is how Professor Van Hoy talks about knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
And ancient Hebrew thought, you know, it wasn't just an intellectual pursuit.
It's intertwined with action and responsibility.
So it wasn't enough to just know things. You had to live out that knowledge.
Exactly. You had to embody it.
Yeah.
It had to inform your choices and your behaviors.
And that ties back to the fall.
It does.
Because they gained knowledge, but they weren't prepared.
For the weight of it.
For the weight of it, yeah. And for the impact.
Yeah. How it would change things.
Yeah, the consequences, you know.
And I missed the mark.
Missed the mark.
I like that.
They didn't quite hit the target.
Yeah, it's not about being inherently bad. It's about making mistakes and facing those consequences.
Exactly. And Professor Van Hoy points out that the Hebrew word for sin doesn't carry the same, like, moralistic baggage.
Oh, interesting.
That we often associate with it today.
Okay.
It's less about breaking rules and more about straying from the path.
Okay.
Failing to live up to one's potential.
So it's about, like, not living in alignment with
your true self.
With the true self.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I like that it's a more nuanced,
more compassionate
understanding of sin.
It's not about condemnation.
Right.
It's about recognizing our imperfections.
Our flaws.
And striving to do better.
Yeah.
So this leads to the idea of redemption, of forgiveness.
Oh.
The possibility for growth and reconciliation.
So even in this story of, like,
humanity's first missteps.
Yeah. Humanity's first.
There's a hint at this potential.
For restoration.
Yeah.
Okay, so even amidst the fall.
There's a glimmer of hope.
There's hope.
It suggests that we can learn from our mistakes.
Right.
And find our way back.
Back to that.
To a right relationship with ourselves, with each other, with God.
Wow, that's really beautiful.
It's a story of hope.
Yeah.
God's unwavering love for humanity.
Okay.
And our capacity for transformation.
So even when we mess up.
There's always a chance to start over.
To make amends, to grow.
Yeah.
I like that. That's a really beautiful way to frame it. It reminds us that even when we mess up, you know, there's always a chance to, like, start over.
It's never too late.
Yeah, make amends, grow.
Learn from our mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Professor Van Hoy is getting at with this whole idea of, like, Genesis 2 being a setup for the fall.
Right.
Because it's not just about, like, oh, they messed up and now everything's terrible. Yeah. It's about, okay, how do we move forward from here?
Yeah. What can we learn?
What can we learn?
From this, you know?
Exactly.
And it's interesting because I'm thinking about how, like, in our modern world, we tend to think of sin as, like, this...
this huge...
yeah, like this...
moral failing.
Yeah, like you're a bad person if you sin.
You're going to hell.
Right, exactly. And it's interesting how Professor Van Hoy kind of reframes that.
Right. He says in ancient Hebrew thought sin wasn't so much about, like, being bad.
Yeah.
It was more about, like, missing the mark.
Right.
Not quite hitting the target.
Not living in alignment with your true self.
Your true self. Yeah. And that opens up a whole different way of looking at things.
It does. Yeah. It's not about being perfect.
No. It's about progress.
It's about progress. It's about learning.
It's about the journey.
It's about the journey. Exactly.
And that's really what Genesis 2 is all about.
Yeah.
It's a journey of discovery. It's a journey of learning. It's a journey of making mistakes and figuring out how to do better.
Right. And I think that's a really powerful message for us today.
I think so, too, because we all make mistakes.
Yeah, we're human.
We're all on this journey together.
Exactly.
And that's why Genesis 2 is still relevant.
Yeah, it's not just some ancient story. You know, it's like...
it speaks to us.
It speaks to us today.
In a really profound way.
Absolutely. Well, this deep dive has been so insightful.
It's been a pleasure.
Really eye-opening. I feel like I have a whole new understanding of Genesis 2. And
new appreciation.
Yeah, new appreciation for it. So... thank you so much for taking us on this journey.
You're welcome.
And thank you to all of our listeners for joining us on this deep dive.
Yes, thank you for listening.
We'll be back soon with another deep dive into a new topic. But until then,
keep exploring.
Keep exploring and stay curious.